The Titans of Trial podcast is sponsored by the Florida Justice Association Research and Education Foundation, promoting the study and understanding of Florida's civil justice system and how its preservation benefits consumers, victims, and all Floridians. Learn more at floridajusticeassociation.org.
From the Florida Justice Association, these are the Titans of Trial.
When you're able to file a lawsuit that has a profound change, not only for the clients, but for society generally, if that gives you a lot of personal satisfaction, and it's a powerful thing, unique to this country.
Bob Kerrigan talks about why he loves being a trial lawyer and his concern about others who are just looking to make a quick buck.
And I think that happens some with lawyers. They get pressed financially. And it's easy to cash out on a case, a $5 million case, they settle for $1 million and they're in the $1 million club. It's like, well, wait just a second, you left $4 million out there.
And some of his advice to trial lawyers.
You can't fool the jury. The core success is that sincerity and commitment to the client. The jury gets it.
Welcome to Titans of Trial, featuring the personal stories of the men and women who've made a difference to the practice of trial law in Florida. I'm Paul Jess, Executive Director of the Florida Justice Association. Bob Kerrigan is as irrepressible as the sunrise over the Pensacola Bay that his law office has overlooked for the past 45 years. Bob is one of the 9 trial lawyers who brought and settled the famous Big Tobacco lawsuit by the state of Florida back in the 1990s. At $13 billion, it was the largest civil judgment at the time in the nation. Among his many achievements is the Florida Bar's Tobias Simon Pro Bono Service Award. He's currently in pursuit of international human rights violators. Bob Kerrigan, with his admitted luck of the Irish and devil-may-care attitude, sat down with Florida Justice Association radio host Harvey Bennett in late August 2017 to discuss the keys to his success, his struggles, and his concern that big money now is too often driving the practice of law.
Bob, you were an accountant who went to FSU Law School, and then you practiced criminal defense before getting into civil litigation. Tell us about that transformation.
Well, when I went to law school, I intended to specialize in business or major in business. And I was working for a corporation after law school, and I didn't like what I was doing very much. I thought, you know, I got a legal education. I was back basically using accounting and finance and that sort of thing in business. So I talked to a lawyer that was working as a public defender, and he told me how much he enjoyed what he was doing. So I came and interviewed the public defender in Escambia County. They offered me a job, so I moved over here, didn't know anybody, didn't have any family here, brought my wife and 2 kids, and went to work as a public defender. And there was only one public defender then, and for the whole circuit. And so almost immediately I was in court trying cases. One time we were in municipal court, and this is like my first or second time. The judge said, do you want to invoke the rule? And I looked, I said, yeah, of course. I mean, I didn't know what the rule was. I didn't know what he was talking about. And all of a sudden, everybody left the room. So the rule was the rule of sequestration, where you don't allow witnesses to overhear what the other witnesses are saying. But I had no idea what the hell it was. I said, yes, we certainly do, Your Honor. And everybody left.
What made you want to be a lawyer in the first place?
I wasn't a very good accountant. I never did find anything I was really good at. I had a lot of jobs. I did all kinds of things. I sold cars. I worked as a mechanic. I did all kinds of things. But I never really found anything I was very good at, so decided to try law.
What were the most important influences in your life growing up?
Well, you have a lot of things that frame who you are, your family, of course. And I came from a blue-collar family, and both my brother and sister have advanced degrees, and we were just always inundated with the family saying, you've got to get your education. So We just never even give it second thought. So that's probably a huge factor, just your family saying you've got to have an education. That's why I'm a big proponent of public education and people getting as much education as they can. But I think also when you're young, impressionable, my football coach had a big influence on me, and in just in terms of mental toughness and facing bad odds. And you may not be the best player, but you can be the best player you can be.
So, have any of those lessons applied to your career of law helped you?
Yeah, for sure, especially with my football coach, because he was a tough, tough guy. And he didn't take any bullshit from anybody. He didn't care who it was, and including the players or other coaches or fans or anything else. Taught a lot of lessons. You got to hang in there when things are bad. Going south on you, you still got to play. You got to finish it up best you can. So, and a lot of things. I think when you're impressionable in 15, 16-year-olds, it really does have a profound effect on you. And so for me, it was my football coach, probably.
Probably a mentor as well, or were there a particular other mentor along the way, maybe especially with your law career?
Yeah, probably my brother was a mentor, and then I've had great law partners. We've had the same partners from the beginning. We just keep adding them. The firm has never changed in 40 years. We're still friends. We're still in business. For 25 years, we didn't have a partnership agreement.
That's amazing. How did you go about honing your lawyering skills? Once you got out of school, you mentioned you were a public defender.
Well, I watched trials, and I would go anytime there was a good lawyer trying a case, try to go in courtroom, watch him. I spent a lot of time in court because of my criminal practice. I was in court literally every day. I had a stack of cases. I had a very successful criminal practice after I left the public defender's office. So I was in court a lot. I got to watch how lawyers communicate with judges and how judges communicate with lawyers. And I would just sit up there and we'd all assemble in the jury box until your cases got called. A lot of times my cases didn't get called for a while, so I just watched everybody else. And I would physically watch trials. And I don't think a lot of that's done now, but each lawyer has their own style and their own effective, their own way of being effective. And that was very helpful to me to see that.
What would you say is the most rewarding part of what you do as a plaintiff's attorney?
Well, we get a lot of personal satisfaction out of helping people. I mean, that sounds kind of trite, but basically that's why we do it. But I think plaintiff's lawyers also, maybe not just plaintiff's lawyers, but when you're able to file a lawsuit that has a profound change, not only for the clients, but for society generally, if that gives you a lot of personal satisfaction, and it's a powerful thing, unique to this country. I've been all over the place. It's unique to this country that you can go down to the courthouse and file a suit and sue the biggest, baddest person on the block. You can confront abusive judges. You can get them off the bench. You can do lots of things as a lawyer, not just as a plaintiff's lawyer.
Let's talk about one of your whoppers, and that is one of the things that you're known for is being one of the 9 attorneys that won the major big tobacco settlement for the state of Florida in the 1990s. $13 billion with a B, the largest civil judgment at the time in the United States. That must have been a thrill.
It was, and equally disappointing, however, was the complete abandonment of the bar, our fellow trial lawyers, everybody, in supporting us for our fee. I had people tell me that it was obscene, and we had a contingency fee contract with the state, which we thought was good. It turned out later everybody reneged on the deal, but in the end, with the arbitration, we were awarded essentially the same fee we would have gotten with the state. So as they say, all's well that ends well.
What are the keys to your success at this point, looking back?
Well, it's easy to say that this particular case or this event or whatever, I've just been enormously lucky. I mean, luck follows me around. That's the damnedest thing. It's like, holy smokes, you know.
It's the luck of the Irish, right?
I guess it is the luck of the Irish. How in the hell that happened to me? And I've had great cases. And, you know, you can be the greatest lawyer in the world if you don't have a case. You can't show it to anybody. You can't if you have those skills. It is particularly gratifying to do the work we do and to have the privilege of doing the work we do.
Was there ever a point in your life when you didn't think you were going to make it, either personally or professionally?
Well, the biggest problem was financial, because we had great cases and we were fronting the money for them, but we were running out of money. This was, I guess, in the 80s, whenever that interest rate went through the roof, went to 18 or 19%. We all took out second mortgages on our house. We were trying to scramble to get the money. We couldn't talk the banks into doing it. I mean, that was a real struggle. I'm especially proud of the fact that we didn't settle off cases for half their value just to get money ourselves. And I think that happens some with lawyers. They get pressed financially, and it's easy to cash out on a case. It's a $5 million case, they settle for $1 million, and they're in the $1 million club. It's like, well, wait just a second, you left $4 million out there. And the money's so big now that a lawyer just in an average practice can have a $10 million case walk in the front door and settle it out for a fraction of its value, take their contingency fee. The courts don't have to approve it, so nobody really knows, and the client entrusting the lawyer doesn't really know that they've been betrayed. And it's the money that is screwing this up so bad now, because the money is very big. And that's particularly true in mass torts, I think, too, where we've lost track of defending, representing people, and now we're representing, you know, big groups of people as opposed to individual clients.
How helpful or hurtful can self-reflection be?
It's essential. I mean, I think I spend more time trying to figure out, all right, how did this get screwed up, as opposed to, oh, aren't you important now and you're a member of this club or you get this plaque or this award or whatever. It's all illusory. It's all bullshit. And the truth is, the self-reflection is, okay, who are you really and what the hell are you doing? And, you know, is this something that you think is motivated by something other than a genuine interest in helping the issue or the person? And you have to keep asking yourself that. You just have to, because if you don't, you start buying your own stuff and you start thinking, I'm really a big shot here, and people walking around and they tell you, you know, how great you are, patting you on the back, whatever. And again, it's meaningless, truthfully. And on reflection, you know it's meaningless. It's like, what have I done actually that's honestly good for whoever I'm representing or whatever cause I'm involved in?
How do you handle disappointment?
I don't get disappointed, really, very much. Maybe myself, like, well, you screwed that up pretty good. I think practicing law, you just deal with the downside of things. I mean, I don't know how to really answer that. I don't focus on disappointment. I mean, yeah, I'm maybe aggravated about something or feel like I've been run over or whatever the hell my current self-pity is, but I don't get disappointed, truthfully.
So what keeps you going?
Well, I think it's a positive outlook. I'm a very optimistic person. I believe I can win anything I get involved in. I think I can. Doesn't mean I'm going to win it, but I wouldn't start it if I didn't think that. I mean, we don't file shakedown lawsuits. We don't file suits to settle for nominal amounts. And we don't, you know, we undertake major cases because we think we have a meritorious case. And to me, that's just the test. You have a meritorious case and go do it.
We mentioned the big tobacco case, but is there one particular case that you will never forget?
Oh, I think I have a lot of cases like that. I've been very fortunate to be involved in some really, really interesting cases that have changed things. I think products liability cases change the way manufacturers produce products. We had a big crane case one time and resulted in a catastrophic injury to a guy, and we think that after that they changed the way they two-block cranes to prevent them from dropping headache balls on people, which is what happened to this guy. And he survived it miraculously. I think my pro bono work has been very gratifying. I think my cases involving abuses in Chile and El Salvador and Guatemala and other foreign countries for abuses where these people end up in the United States and get some kind of protection to be in this country, and we end up suing them under a United States statute that allows you to sue people for things they did in another country, to an alien even. And so those have been gratifying. And I think the case with the the newspaper. I represented newspaper reporters who were sued by a big, powerful company, and the owner of the company didn't like what they said, and that case ultimately resulted in the Florida Supreme Court ruling that the tort of false light is the name of the tort, that it was ruled unconstitutional. So I was very proud of that because something very bad happened to these reporters who just reported the truth.
How has your involvement with the Florida Justice Association impacted your career?
Well, I think it's just essential that we have this kind of organizational interchange and people that have a common interest in doing the kinds of things we do. That without the FJA, I always liked the Florida Trial Lawyers Association. I kind of a holdover of the old name because that's really what we are. Without that, you don't have anything. They'd put us out of business. The Florida legislature, with this Republican administration, they would put us out of business, which really puts the public at peril. That's really, you know, not to be too melodramatic about it, but the public would be so terribly harmed by this Republican view that corporate responsibility is not something we should be concerned about. Without the FJA, we wouldn't have that, and the people within the FJA have been really good to me and supportive of me, and it's been very important in my career.
What's your view on the future of the legal profession? Any concerns, changes, obstacles to your practice?
Well, we're so well established, and with our clientele base and all, that we're fine. I fear that we are losing the ability to try lawsuits. There's so much pressure on alternative dispute resolution and other ways of resolving these conflicts. And it sounds okay, it sounds good, but society is protected by these great lawsuits where the wrongdoers are exposed to cross-examination and public policy changes because of that exposure. Yes, you know, alternative dispute resolution, mass tort settlements, money's flowing, everybody's doing well, but I fear that the skill of performing in a trial in a courtroom is being lost because we're just not able to do enough of them. Our judges will tell you that. We had a case we just tried about a month ago, and the judge told me, she said, we haven't had a trial, she hadn't had a jury trial in her civil division for 2.5 years. And she's a very active and a good judge, very good judge. And others are saying the same thing. We're just not seeing enough civil jury trials. That means there's not enough young lawyers trying them for sure.
All settled.
Yeah.
Speaking of young lawyers, what one piece of advice do you have for incoming, upcoming lawyers?
If you represent somebody, you better believe in them and believe their case and like them. And don't get involved in a case where you don't believe the client is 100% right in pursuing it, or you don't trust them, or you believe that somehow you're doing something that you are not 100% committed to. You can't fool the jury. I don't think you can do it. Now, there are lawyers that are skilled, that are pretty savvy, and have pulled off maybe some things in their careers, but the core success is that sincerity and commitment to the client. The jury gets it. Common sense, the jury gets it. This person believes in this case, so I'm going to at least listen to what they're saying.
We've talked about the law. Let's talk about ethics, which you are starting to get into. Do the ends sometimes justify the means?
I don't know. Maybe. Easiest thing to say is, oh, well, of course not. It depends, you know. If I'm trying to get rid of a corrupt judge, I may have to have an ex parte communication with another judge, okay? So, hey, well, you shouldn't do that. Oh, my goodness, you can't do that. I'll do whatever the hell I want to do. If I think and am committed that what we're doing is right, and the only way to redress this is to maybe cross that line, honestly, I might do it, yeah.
You are not only an attorney, but a local taxpayer watchdog here in Escambia County, and you're not afraid to speak truth to power, are you?
I'm not. I'm very proud of that. If you're going to be proud of something, I think I'm proud of the fact that I don't give a damn who big they are, how strong they are, how much money they are. That's why I don't belong to any. I don't serve on any boards. The only board I've ever served on is the Innocence Project board. I don't serve on boards. I don't belong to civic clubs. Member of a church, but I don't schmooze and find myself compromised by not being able to pursue a case. And lady come to me in my early practice, and she lived in a housing project, and they had rats in there, and a rat bit her daughter or something. I mean, I just raised unmitigated hell about it till I finally straightened it out. I had to confront the power politics and stuff because they weren't doing the right thing. We had the same problem with the road camp here. They were abusive, sadistic bastards that did the worst kinds of things to young guys in the road camp. And we had to go against law enforcement. We had to go against everybody else. Sometimes you just got to do it.
Bob, how would you like to be remembered?
I don't really give a shit, honestly. Because to yourself, be true. And if you're trying to be remembered for something, he's probably going to remember for something else. I think if they took a poll, one of our friends, social friends, said, Kerrigan, if you're ever murdered, the potential list of suspects will be so damn long that they'll never be able to go through them all. And I think that's probably true. You are what you are. And I'm not even sure what people remember you as is right anyway. I mean, it's probably a function of some stuff they've read or they've seen, or, you know, how many people really know you as a person? Really, really know you? Not too many people, your wife, your kids maybe. But, and so what everybody else thinks, I don't give a shit. I never have. It's like, well, if you don't like me, you don't like me. That's okay, because maybe you're right for not liking me. Hell, I don't know. I mean, I'm totally justified in not liking me. But I don't spend a lot of time trying to be liked, okay?
Bob Kerrigan, you are a titan of trial. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Paul Jess. We hope you enjoyed listening to this Titans of Trial episode. If you're not already a member, we'd like to invite you to join the Florida Justice Association. Please visit us on the web at floridajusticeassociation.org or drop us a line at radio@floridajusticeassociation.org.
Thank you for listening to this Titans of Trial podcast, sponsored by the Florida Justice Association Research and Education Foundation, promoting the study and understanding of Florida's civil justice system and how its preservation benefits consumers, victims, and all Floridians. Learn more at floridajusticeassociation.org.